Well, welcome to Evening Tea Time. That's right. We are back and I am down to my last two tea times of 2023. I can't believe that we're already in December and Christmas is just around the corner. But if you haven't subscribed to the Miss Liz's YouTube channel, you want to do that because next week on the 21st, we have the reunion tea time happening and there'll be over 90 guests coming back, 14 different countries. And we'll have some incredible updates, some Christmas shopping for all of you out there who want to get books for your grandkids and your kids out there and your family members. We also have some clothing lines coming in. We have some music. We have all of that good stuff out there for you at Christmas time. And we have some entertainment coming along the way. But tonight I have the incredible Donna Conrad in the studio with me. And we're going to spill a different type of tea tonight. So we're going to talk about some empowerment. We're going to talk about the concept of individual empowerment. And we're going to take you on a flow. We're going to spill some good tea together. So before we get started, we're going to do all that good stuff, disclaimer and bio, and then I'm going to get Donna in here and we're going to spill a TEA with you all tonight on Tea Time with Miss Liz. Disclaimer for Miss Liz Tea Time live show. Miss Liz myself is going live using StreamYard. Before leaving a comment, please grant StreamYard permission to see your name at StreamYard.com. Please be advised that the content brought forward for any Tea Time show hosted by myself, Miss Liz, is always brought forward in good faith. However, may bring forth dialogues and opinions that are not representative of my platform. The facts and information are perceived to be accurate at the giving time of airing. All Tea Time guests and audience participants are responsible for using their good judgment in taking any action that may relate to the discussion. The content brought forward may include discussion for some where they may be emotionally at risk. It is significant to know that this show is engaging in discussion forums only to offer and inspire awareness and connection and is not providing therapeutical advice. If you have any questions about the disclaimer or the panelist discussion, you may freely contact me, Miss Liz, through my email at bookingmissliz@gmail.com. Moving forward, should you choose to voluntarily participate in this show in any aspect, I myself, Miss Liz, welcomes you. And should you decide that the show is not made for you at this time, I respect those wishes and will see you at a later show at a later date and time. Again, all Tea Time shows are done on Thursday, 10 a.m., 3 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If it's not a Thursday, it's a rescheduled tea time or it's a surprise tea time that is coming and bringing a different type of tea to the table. We are ending 2023 with tea time on a Monday. So December 18th is my last tea time of 2023. You'll want to tune in for that one. Now, a little bit on my guest tonight. I have Donna Conrad in here and she is going to bring you some good strong tea because we've been sitting in the back and we got a lot of things to a lot of similarities and a lot of good wishes in that from grandparents and grandmas and grandpas. Donna Conrad is an award-winning author, journalist, activist, and teacher. Her core values revolve around the concept of individual empowerment, a sustaining ideal running through the books she writes. Her writing interests are varied and include articles for fine art, periodicals. I don't think I'm saying that right. I'll get her to say it. Memoirs, narrative nonfiction, as well as historical flash and paranormal fiction. Oh, paranormal. Here we go again. She teaches all of the above at writers' conferences. Her first published book, House of the Moon, Surviving the 60s, has received rave reviews. Donna's life is as varied as her writing. She embraces change as an exciting adventure. She has studied writing with the likes of Allen Ginsberg, Lawrence Burlington Heddy. I'm not saying that right. I'm going to get her to say that because I don't want to disrespect anybody. And Jack White. She has also been mentored by Donald Mass, whom she works with privately on her upcoming fourth book historical fiction series, The Madeline Chronicles. Book one of Madeline Chronicles will be released on April 9, 2024 by Cold Creek Press. To learn more on Donna's full bio, check out Miss Liz's Facebook page. And I'm going to get Donna in here so she can correct me with all of those little bobos. Donna, could you give those shout outs to all of, I sometimes, you know, I cannot pronounce the names and the letters and words. My dyslexia just kicks in and I'm just like, ah, nope, I'm not doing it.
Exactly. So, well, it was periodicals. So I wrote for magazines, which are fancy, called periodicals. So I wrote for those. And then it's Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who was one of the beat poets. And Ginsberg, another beat poet.
Yeah, I don't mean any disrespect to any of these people. And that's why I always get the guests to say it, because they're the ones that work with these guys, right? So
absolutely.
So Donna, I'm going to start off. You're my second last guest of 2023, and I can't believe I've already done and I've done over 150 tea times this year, and I'm just like, it's like all coming down to the end, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can handle this.
It is amazing that you've done that much. I'm still trying to figure out where July went.
Right?
So, you know.
It was like skip, hop, and jump, and we're in December, right?
And here we are, exactly.
So, Donna, I'm going to bring you back to the little girl. Who were you as a little girl, and who are you now as a grown lady?
Oh, my goodness. Well, as a little girl, I was incredibly optimistic and hopeful and believed the best in everybody. And when things didn't go quite right, I made up stories to make them go right. And as we talked beforehand, my grandpa, Dean, a big red Irishman, was really influential to me. And he was a storyteller. And so he would tell stories about children who had things going wrong in their life and how they had magical animals or fairies or leprechauns, the good leprechauns, to help them out. And as I got older, I asked him, I said, do you believe all this? And he said, absolutely. Whatever you think, you can make become real. And so just imagine yourself out of the harmful situations and imagine what your life could be like. And I think that's one of the reasons I survived. The subtitle of my book, House of the Moon, is Surviving the 60s. And it was not a good family situation. It was not a happy, idyllic childhood. And so I think that little girl found a way to become a woman who I see reality. And I choose to interpret it in my own way so that I always try to see the best in people and try to understand if they're acting out in certain ways, why that might be. And I try not to judge and just say, you know, people, we don't know. Another thing which a lot of grandpas have said, walk a mile in their shoes. I don't know what is triggering a person at any particular time. All I have control over is my reaction and my interaction with them. So that, I think the two go together, the little girl and the grown woman.
Well, and that's why I always ask this question, because a lot of times our inner child, our little girl, our little child, the male or the female, has something to do with what we do in the present, right? if we didn't have a voice or we were silenced as a little child, then we become voices as adults. You know, we reverse, mm-hmm. we do the opposite. Because life is all about balance, right? It's the up and downs. You know, if we had yes. it down when we were little, when we get older, we want the up. So we speak up, right? I just love the title of the book, House of the Moon, because it tells me something that you were a speaker to the universe. You spoke out. Mm-hmm. You looked for it. And it's that storytelling, right? Of your grandpa.
It is.
You know, so.
And go ahead.
No. So I was just going to say, like, how did you get the title of the House of the Moon? Because I like that title.
That is great, too, because my mother, who was my grandfather's daughter, so this is maternal side. I was born in 1952, and my mother is a 50s woman, though, decided that she wanted to name me Donna for lady, meaning lady, and Diane for the moon. So she named me Lady of the Moon, and she thought I would always be influenced by the moon and be that creative, bright light in the night time. And so I was always her little Lady of the Moon. And so when I wrote the book, it's to honor her and to bring that back to me, that my mother, before I was even born, wanted to name me for that light in the darkness.
Wow. See, and there's that balance again. The light and the dark, mm-hmm. right? You need both, you know. And I like that you said when you shared about being little, that you try not to judge.
I try, yes.
we all judge, and I try to get that out there. We all judge. If you say you're mm-hmm. not judging, you're not being honest, you're not being transparent. We all judge something. We judge what we don't understand. It is human nature to judge, you know. But I want to get into the moon. What has the moon done for you, Donna?
The moon for me is it is the ebb and flow of life, that at any time it can either be very full, it can be very dark, it can fluctuate. Every month, every day, the moon changes. And that, to me, epitomizes what life is. And you go with the flow. And if you try to hold back against that, I feel that's when you start to become angry, judgmental. You start to become defensive. And so the moon is that ability to change. And to change its shape, to change its luminous, to change its direction. The sun is always there. It might be behind clouds, but the sun pretty much stays in its same shape all the time. But the moon fluctuates. And it, to me, is very closely associated with women and with our moon tides, with our emotions, with the fluids that build up in our body. And so I've always looked at it as a feminine expression of light.
It does make sense, right? When you look at the moon does change. The sun doesn't. The moon does. It changes into different shapes and the difference in different times and zones and all of that, right? The emotions of the sky. You know, we don't talk about that. You know, mm-hmm. maybe there's something out there that needs to come and, you know, with a T of the moon. But I really, when I did my work on you, Donna, I didn't work on you, but anyway,
you worked on me, you worked me over. Okay.
When I did my research on you, Donna, I found that you do a lot of women empowerment. You do a lot of speaking up for women and that, you're an activist and all of that. So, and you talk about the gods and that, and the journey and the travel and the strength of women. And you do a lot of storytelling from your mom and your grandma, your grandpa. So what message would you give to the young ladies out there? Because I want to hit the younger generation with the empowerment, because we say so many words, but we don't actually understand what they stand for.
Well, to younger women, and when I teach, I'm usually teaching in a writer's conferences or that setting. But for young woman, whether you're a writer or you're an accountant or whatever you are, there is There is truth to be found in intuition. There's truth to be found in the knowing that we feel in our bones. And this is a connection to something, to the moon, to the waters make up the majority of this planet, to the emotions. And I think that for young women to embrace that part and not be subjected to just the mind of the more masculine logical elements that says you feel that. What does that mean? It means a lot. It means a lot to feel deeply. And I think the deeper women are able to feel and express that feeling and the connection to the universe, to the earth, to all of the forms of manifestation of deities, the more chance our world has of surviving. It's through that connection, to water, to love, to light in the darkness that I think our salvation will be found.
Well, it's like the moonlight on the water, right? They
Oh, I
blend
love that. Yes.
together. Like if you ever go down by the water at nighttime and the moon is on it, it's so recharging, right? There's a big connection there. I love midnight walks. I can go down by the water and you just watch the moon on it because it actually gives you a picture, gets you to look at the waves a little different.
Differently, and I love photography. It's one of my hobbies. And we have the Willamette River right by where I live, which is a pretty long, the longest river in Oregon, I believe. And I went down there on a full moon, and I have this photograph that I have up in my office that is so incredible. It is like this light path that goes across the water, what you're saying with the undulating waves of the river, and goes right up into the moon and into this black sky. It's remarkable.
It's really magical. I highly recommend everybody go take a midnight walk and just go by the water. Don't jump in the water. Just enjoy the moment, the silence, the quietness of the waves and sound like that. I want to get into the House of the Moon. You have surviving the 60s. And when we first opened the show, you talked about how life was hard as a child. So how was it for you in the 60s?
Well, I had a pretty unique situation. My father was an undercover narcotics agent for the state of California. And my sister, who's 4 years older than me, her boyfriend dealt drugs to all the bands that came through LA.
So I guess he wasn't
Got
on
caught
daddy's
there?
good path, right?
You know, my dad, I think the Nile might be a river in Egypt because the whole time he had to know what we were doing. And as I say, in the opening of the book, you know, that he had two teenage daughters who were willing recruits with every toke. And so my sister, who was 4 years older, was of course into the 60s drug scene and all of that. And so I was introduced to it very young. I mean, I was hanging out with Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix and all these people when I was 14 years old.
Wow.
And doing a lot of drugs. And what I say is that I did drugs to normalize my life because it was so disruptive. It was so my dad was basically a paranoid schizophrenic who was incredibly violent. And my mother, to cope with that, was a fall down alcoholic. So my sister and I were the adults. And as I said, I was 14, she was 17 and 18 during this time. So with everything being that crazy, I took drugs and it made everything normal. It was like, okay, I can deal with this now. And I think a lot of addiction has that basis in it. We're just trying to make our lives acceptable. We're trying to get through the day. And in the 60s, I feel the drugs were a lot more innocent than they are now. And but they also were a way for me to rebel against my father, who was locking up kids like me for drugs. So
Well,
yeah,
was it like that push? Like, are you going to lock me up, Dad? Like, kind of.
I think I was pushing to see if he'd ever acknowledge it.
Oh.
And he didn't. I don't know if he was just incredibly dense or if he didn't want to see it.
Oh, maybe a blind eye.
And there was one time when we were actually arrested for drugs for having marijuana in the car, the night before Easter. So then he kind of had to deal with it, but he blamed my sister and bailed her out and thought I was just the sweet, innocent one. I mean, I was a straight A student.
You were the rebel.
I was the sweet little daughter, the baby of the family who could never do anything wrong, and my sister could do nothing right. So it was that way. So he had to know, but I think he chose not to acknowledge it, not to deal with it directly.
Well, back in those days, like in the 60s and 70s, it was always the oldest that was the leader, right? So we got blamed for everything. I'm the oldest in the family, and I was always in trouble because I should have set a better example. I should have done this better, So I think it was something that was just in that generation where it was the leader and the oldest always got the blame for everything, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And she was a rebel, more so than I was, and was kicked out of our high school. And as I say, I was raised in Covina, California, which I said in the 1960s was a clean white place to live. Everybody took their kids to the suburbs. And she was caught with a joint, one cigarette in her purse. And my dad sent her to live with an ex-police officer, friend of his, in the San Francisco Bay Area in 1965.
Wow.
And I asked him before he died, do you see any kind of irony in that? He's like, no. Why? Well, of course, she ran away and was living in Haight-Ashbury within 2 weeks. And
Wow.
yeah, so she went away having smoked pot and came back even shooting up heroin from San Francisco. So it wasn't a good thing for her, but she always looked after me.
So, Donna, were you closer to your grandparents?
I was very close to my grandfather. Yeah, and I was very close to my mom. And that's the one thing, part of what I always say helped me survive was I knew my mother and my sister loved me unconditionally. And my grandpa, I could always go to. They didn't live close to us, but I knew he was there. And whenever I was with him, I felt like it was just a kindred spirit, somebody that I just could lean against and have him tell me stories. So it was wonderful.
Well, and we always have to find that safety net, right? Growing up, which one we can run to, like where we can, vent and release and say, hey, I don't understand why all of this stuff is going on. And back then it was always storytelling, right? They wouldn't give you a straight answer. They would tell you a story and then make you
Exactly.
figure it out. I know my grandpa and my grandma were the same. They would just tell me stories, and then they would say, my grandma would always tell me this, run your own race. And I didn't understand until I got older what she meant by that. And as I got older, I understood what she meant by that. Run your own life, do your own choices, and make your own, and take accountability for the choices that you make because you're the one running it. So if you're getting somebody else to run your race, well, you're not winning at it, are you?
I
So
like that. Run your own race. I had not heard that before, but
yeah.
that is
Yeah,
good.
she used to always tell me that. And she loved running. So when she was a little girl, she was a runner. So she liked running and that. So, but I never did understand until I got older what she meant by that. Same as like my Oma with the tea, right? She gave me the tea and she's like, sit, recharge, reflect, and release. And I was, I don't know what the heck this woman's talking about. Like, I'm only a little kid. Like, why is she giving me these big words for her? And she was from Germany. So I always thought she was mad at me because there's always that. So I was just like, oh, I'm in trouble. But she was actually just teaching me about life. And that's what we do here is we teach life, right? Through our storytelling and
Exactly.
through our books. So, and your books have really changed your life because you've used them to express yourself and overcome stuff. So
Yeah, exactly. As I say, writing the memoir was the best therapy I ever had. And while writing it, there are some very, very dark stories in there. And that is a warning to anybody who picks it up, trigger warning every single chapter.
Oh, trigger warning.
All kinds, trigger warning everywhere. And that's why when people read it, they're like, you actually survived this. But yes, everything that happened in the book, that's in the book, actually happened. And I had some pretty serious psychotic breaks while I was writing it because it was hard to go back there and relive it as an adult and tell it honestly. So I don't come off looking great in the book, and my sister doesn't. Nobody comes off looking really great except for my high school English teacher that pulled me out of it. Spoiler alert, high school English saved
English teacher saves the day.
my life. Exactly, he did. And one of the wonderful things is after the book came out, some of his other students let him know about it, and he's named in it. Other people's names are made up. And I got to see him after 45 years. And it was just like no time had passed. And we were at a writer's conference, and he flew out to it where I was teaching. And he told me things about myself, how he saw me when I was this angry, stoned 17-year-old rebel. And I was just amazed at how much he understood me and how much he saw that I didn't see.
So, what did this English teacher do for you, Donna?
Okay, so
I don't want to spoil the book. Everybody go grab
well, yeah,
the
exactly.
book.
What he did for me is he believed in me. He saw past this tall, skinny girl with straight dark hair, wearing all black and being just angry at everybody and not wanting to talk to anybody. And somehow he saw the genius in me. And I don't know how he did that. And he said he wasn't sure either. He just knew that there was more in me. And so he just slowly kind of pulled that out. And then what he did the most for me was give me confidence in myself to become a writer. And he would have me write book reports when nobody else was, but he knew I loved to read. And so he'd have me write all of these book reports where I had to, and they would be like 5, 6 pages book reports. And he would give me constructive criticism, which I always try to do when I'm teaching. To me, there's no reason to tear somebody down.
Right.
Find the good things that they've done and help them to understand their strengths and to recognize their weaknesses and to move
Yeah.
past the weaknesses and to move into your personal strengths. So he did that, and then he also signed me up for 3 scholarships and
Wow.
had me fill out the applications and do all of, oh no, he filled out the applications, but he had me write the essays and everything like that. And I wasn't going to do it. And I still remember, and this is a very touching part in the book, I avoided him for like 2 weeks. And then he kind of caught me and he said, okay, I'm going to turn these in. And he had filled out 6 of them and said, and I said, do you think I even stand a chance? And he looked at me and said, you have to take a chance to stand a chance.
Oh, I like that.
And that has been just a heart lesson to me. You need to take that chance. You need to go out there or you don't stand any chance. So that's what he did for me. He made it okay for me to take a chance. And I've taken chances the whole rest of my life.
I like that. If you don't take a chance, how can you stand?
Yep. If you don't take a chance, you don't stand a chance. Very, very wise man. For any of you out there that might know English teachers, his name is David Sundstrand, and he is magnificent. And he did this for many more people than just me.
Well, there's that teacher, right, that sees something in us, and that's why they become teachers, because a lot of them get into it because of the passion and the purpose.
Yes.
They're there to guide that one child, and sometimes 100 children, but there's always that one child that they see and they say, you know what? Oh, there's something in this one. We gotta save her. We gotta help her, guide her, I am so grateful that that you had that experience.
Well, and that I got to meet him after all
Oh,
that.
that is
Well,
awesome, right? When you get to meet them like years later, you're like,
45 years later.
I remember you.
He's like, oh, I'll be wearing a fedora and this and that. I walked into the room and there are like 80 other people around and I knew him.
I'm going for him. That's the one I want.
Exactly. So, yeah, it is. To me, that's one of the greatest gifts we can give each other as human beings. And that's recognizing the genius, the special uniqueness in each other.
Yeah. There's that one person that always sees something in us that we don't even see in ourselves until they say, mm-hmm. look in the mirror. It's already there. This. Right? That's what my Oma always said. Look in the mirror. And I'd be like, I don't know. I don't like the mirror. I don't like what was looking at me. Right?
Actually, there's a scene in my book where I'm looking in the mirror and I'm avoiding looking in the mirror because I didn't like what looked back at me. And it was like what was in my eyes. And so I it's funny. That is, again, another resonance with you.
Right. I strongly believe that there was a reason why you're here on Tea Time. Like, you know, things happen for a reason. And mm-hmm. we just never understand until it actually happens.
And sometimes so, not even then.
Yeah. Even then we're like scratching our heads and we're like, oh, what? This what had to that? Happen? Who is this? Why? And then 20 years later, you're like, oh, now I get it.
There it is.
So, Donna, I want to get into, because we're talking about flows and flavors and blends and all of that, and looking in the mirror, I want to look in your cup. What's in your cup? And what kind of tea are you going to give me?
Oh, I would have to say teaching, empowerment. And activism, or being an activist.
So you want to share a little bit why you gave me those words?
Well, teaching, because I think I fall to that naturally, because I want to share what I know. I want to share the rough spots I've gone over and how I figured out to make them a little smoother and maybe give somebody a hint how they could do it, but mainly to share what I've learned. And to me, in teaching, I always learn more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a two-way street.
Teaching is learning, right?
It is. It truly is. So teaching is a big part of my life and has been. I was a high school English teacher for a while, and I was a dance teacher. I was a martial arts teacher. I was a yoga instructor. And now I teach at writing conferences. So yeah. Teaching
all I see is like a big cross. Like, she's here. She'll get you.
You're going all over.
Most words. Every way. No messing around.
And then empowerment. To me, we talked about this a little bit backstage, but for each person to own their own individual nature, their own reactions, their own interactions with people, to own their own personal power in a way. And through empowerment is, to me, one of the most important things is claiming personal responsibility. And when you can claim responsibility for what you did and you say, yes, I am completely responsible for everything I think, everything I do, everything I say, then that's where true personal empowerment comes from, because you're owning who you are. And that means you're not always right. And you're not always dignified. Yeah. You're not always non-judgmental. All of these things. And it's only in accepting who we are and responsibility for what we do and what we think that we come into our own personal power. And that's what empowerment is to me, is knowing who we are and why we're doing what we're doing.
Which makes sense, right? We have to know who we are in order to serve us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to take the, I think I've said it already, so I'll repeat it one more time. It's personal responsibility. So let's get past blame and get to responsibility. And so with the all the tension that's going on and people the flying off the handle in especially in the United States. Then it's like, okay, yeah, let's get past blame. Who's responsible for this situation? And what I said earlier, the only thing I can really control is my reaction to things, my involvement and things. And I think if everybody did that, we'd see things calming down a lot faster than they are.
I strongly agree. And in Canada, personal responsibility too needs to stand up. If we keep blaming people and we keep complaining and that, we're not solving anything. We're just doing this big circle. We're not finding
Exactly.
solutions. We're not finding directions. We're just repeating history, right?
Exactly. Excuse
So,
me.
and activism. I want to get into that. You gave me the word activism. So,
Activism. Yes,
what have
that's
you
yes.
done to activate the activism in you?
I've written. I write. I teach. And so House of the Moon was really a definite active. Okay, I'm losing words here. It was activism on my part to be as honest as I could about what this, about what, not only what my life was like, but what the 60s were like. And the 60s were not this glorified rock and roll, love, peace, all this stuff. No, it was a very brutal time, and violence and segregation and just the inequality for not only minorities but for women, and the harshness and the divisiveness of that decade is something that I think we all could learn from now, because we're seeing that same kind of divisiveness now, and it's taking different channels, or different groups are being held out differently. But in the 60s, it was a struggle to live each day for many, many people. And for me, it was. So I think the activism is to say, yes, things are tough now, but they have been tough before. And this was something that my grandpa would tell me. They lived through the Dust Bowl in Colorado. He was a dirt farmer in Colorado. And so when things would get tough, when he moved his family out to Los Angeles, it would be like, oh, let me tell you about the time. And I'd hear about, them needing to cover all the plates and that, and there would be dust on everything, and it would be in their lungs. And my aunt died at 5 years old from dust pneumonia. And it's so you go back and you don't say, oh, it was worse then, but you say, okay, somehow people survive. And how do they survive? With some sense of dignity, with some s sense of self-respect and respecting other people. And so that to me is activism, in that you tell a story that shows how other people have done it. And then I guess the thing is, you walk your talk. I mean, I give lectures about things that people are shocked by, and try to help writers to write. Well, one of my classes is writing real, writing wrong. And it is to cut down to the bone and to let people know what it is truly like. And I think as artists, we're able to go to those deep places, and that opens a way, a little tunnel, or like the moonlight on the river shows people the way to find that within themselves. So I think that is my definition of my activism.
I think it's a really strong tea, and I like the way that you are really transparent, because that's what it was back in the 60s. The transparency was hidden behind closed doors, right? A lot of
Yes.
things were in different homes. You heard this growing up, I'm sure, Donna. What happens behind closed doors stays behind closed doors. What the neighbor does, you don't say anything. You just turn your head and keep walking, right? you could see somebody beating his wife, or you know, a child being beaten by their parent, and you were told just keep walking, don't put your nose in there, right?
Well, in our case, my dad was incredibly physically violent to my mother. I mean, where he would just knock her unconscious, and I mean, beat her senseless. And I remember they would just be fighting, and there'd be a knock on the door, and the neighbors had called the police, and the police would show up, and my dad would go out there and flash his undercover badge at them and say, oh yeah, the neighbors are just overreacting, the wife got a little out of hand, you understand this, and the police would go away.
There's a lot of families, you know, that are in the police force and that got away with a lot of abuse because they did exactly that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they're just overreacting. They're just, you know, and that's why a lot of people never spoke up back then. And you see that.
Well, you were taught not to.
Yeah, exactly, right? And now today, everyone is sharing their stories of surviving. And I think that it had to happen that way, Donna, in order for us to have voices today. We needed to have that guideline, that trail of how it was to be quiet and how we need to work up and get that voice. It's almost like you said, like, if you need to take a chance to stand a chance. And it's almost like our stories of survival, right? We needed to take a chance in order to survive that, in order to be that stand today and that voice today and have these stories in these memoirs and that out there, you know, and have that hope and inspiration to share for other people to speak up. Because back then in the 60s and 70s, it was all hush, hush. You keep your mouth quiet and you just move along, you know. And in today, in 2020s, we're learning to have a voice. We're learning to say, you know what, we went through a lot of shit, but that shit made us who we are today, you know. And it took us out of something and put us into this, you know. And it's like when I started a show and I asked you who you were as a little girl and who you are now. You were that quiet little girl, and you grew to the and you flourished into this beautiful blossom flower, and you have this voice, and you're using what you learned along the way to help others, you know.
Exactly. Because in the 60s and even later in life, I mean, I wrote this book when I was almost 60 years old. And I thought I was a 60-year-old woman who had never spoken to these issues. And I felt so liberated, finally, being able to discuss, you know, sexual violence, domestic violence, just the repression that was evident everywhere. And it was amazing that I had been, until I was 60 years old, able to say these things.
Yeah.
So yeah, having a voice is so important.
Well, and I think the cover of the book, you have this rawness and realness of looking up and saying, I want it out. I want to release, you know? And
thank you.
I have to grab a copy for sure. I know I'm going to be triggered because I've been through so much of that stuff as well, you know. But I think we need these voices, and we need stories like yours done out there in order to empower other women to get their voice and to share.
Well, and to know that I am here now, and I love my life. I have been married for 46 years to an incredibly loving, wonderful, supportive, dynamic man. And we're still as much in love now as probably more so than we were when we were just in our mid-20s. And it can happen. And it doesn't matter the trauma you've been through, accept who you are, accept that trauma, and don't hold it against everybody you meet. You know, allow for the possibility that it could be better.
Yeah. So what's your secret 46 years?
46 years. Oh my gosh. We're each other's best friends. We really are. I mean, there's nobody I'd rather spend time with than my husband. Don't tell the cats.
The three cats, right?
Exactly. Don't tell them. They'd be really pissed. But yeah, and just being able to be honest and real with each other. And
Yeah.
that it's the basis of our relationship. And what is very funny, I was very definitely a dye-in-the-wool hippie, anti-establishment, and my husband was trying to be a police officer. So you kind of look, and he had short hair, and he was very kind of militaristic in that. And I was this long-haired, flowy hippie. Underneath, the core values were all the same. And that's why I say allow for the possibility that someone could be more than you think they are.
I like that, core values. We don't speak about core values, you know. And for all the getting listeners out there, 46 years is a lot of work, but it's also a lot of fun, I'm guessing too.
It has been wonderful. It has been the start of my book. I quote Hunter J. Thompson saying, buy the ticket, take the ride. And that is almost like run your own race. I mean, you bought the ticket, you take the ride. And I would have to say that with my husband. It has been a wild ride that has just been so joyous and so enthusiastic in everything.
Like that, buy the ticket, take the ride. I love how you got like little messages and little storytelling. I see Grandpa coming through you, Donna, and saying, you know what? She's telling the stories.
She's telling the stories. Oh, yeah. And the whole book, House of the Moon, is written in vignettes. So some of them are like 250 words. That's it. And that's why I say people say if you remember the 60s, you didn't live the 60s. Well, I remember the 60s in vignettes. So I will remember something crystal clear. This happened. I don't know how I got there, what happened after, anything, but this happened. And so I write it, and it's all first person present tense. So when you're in there, and this is happening to you as a reader. So it's even more intense because of that. And that is, and I chose not to use quotes around dialogue because as you and I are speaking, this is a free exchange, a flow between us. We're not putting quotes around things. So when I wrote this, I wanted it to be as if this is just happening around you and you're hearing it. So all of that was conscious choice. And it was not easy, I'm gonna tell you. I much prefer being back to historical fiction with quotes and,
So Donna, how long did it take you to write the book?
It took me 18 months to write it, and that included editing, that taking out and then rearranging, and then my publisher, my editor, fighting with him on a regular basis. No, that story has to stay in there. He's like,
No, I need that
that's my favorite. You can't take that out. And he'd look at me and
thing, right?
say,
When writing a book, Donna, we have
oh.
editors, and then they come in and they're like, no, ch-ch-ch-ch. And we're like, no,
That would be
that has to be in there.
the best ever. And he'd just look at me and say, does it move the story forward? And I would say,
Yeah.
damn you.
Or
No, it
you
doesn't.
just took the best piece of the cookie out. Like, how do I fix it?
And so for my longer books, which The Last Magdalene's 130,000 words,
Oh
it
my goodness.
reads very quickly. But if it didn't move the story forward, I lost it. It's like everything that you do, and it's almost to me that's a metaphor for life. If we're doing something and it's not moving our personal story forward, then we need to somehow get out of that situation. We need to get out of that. And it doesn't mean it's moving it forward in a pleasant way. I mean, it can be something that's traumatic, it can be something that is exhilarating.
Yeah.
But what we're doing, I feel, needs to move us forward to be of value.
So what got you into the next book that's coming out in 2024?
What got me into it was meeting a woman who had read my other books, who was a Magdalene scholar. And this is Mary Magdalene. I write about Miriam because that would have been her Hebrew name. But she said, do you know anything about this woman? And I said, no. She said, oh, she was a remarkable woman, and started telling me about her life and the things that we know about her. And but what really captivated me was when she said, so we all believe that there wasn't any goddess worship, that the Hebrews were monotheistic. They had one God, that was it. And she said, how many proscriptions do you think there are against the goddess worship in the Old Testament? I said, what? She says, there are like over 80, 90 times where they're saying, you shall not worship the goddess. Now, as a parent, or even having cats, you know you don't tell a child not to do something if they're not doing it.
Right? They're going to do the opposite.
So I'm like, well, so why did they keep saying don't do this if people weren't doing it? So it really led me down the research path, and I'm trained as a historian, and to go down and to look through the times and the places and to see what was really going on and what was the Magdalene's place when she's mentioned first among all the women that followed Jesus. She's mentioned more times than any other woman except Jesus's mother. So she had a pretty high standing, and what could that standing have been within the realistic, archaeologically and historically proven time that was there? And so I wanted to create the story that gave us, like the 60s, what was it like to be in first century Judea with Roman occupation? What was it like when the patriarchy in the form of Rome and the high priest of the temple who were collaborating with Rome decided that women shouldn't have rights anymore? Because women in Judea in the first century could own property, they could be choose to be married or not married, they could inherit in their own name, they were judges, they were well respected, and all of a sudden that changed around the mid first century. So what was it like before that time for women, for people? It was a dynamic shift in perspectives, a power shift. And again, that reminds me of the 60s. I think I've found a theme here.
Yeah, I see some, it's a lot of bringing back the voice of why. Why were we silent? Why was it changed? Why were our rights taken from us? Yeah, it's the 60s and the new book coming out in 2024 have a lot in common,
They
more than.
do, and more than on the surface. And it's true.
Yeah.
And on the not the tagline, but one of the lines I say for the last Magdalene is that it's a passionate story of people's lives and the power of one woman's voice that refuses to be silenced. And that's what I say my mission is to give voice to women that have been marginalized, maligned, sidelined throughout history. And so I go back to find them, and I find ones that I feel are dynamic and have something to teach us today.
Oh, that's incredible. And this book is coming out when in 20
April 9th. It's
April
called The
9th.
Lane.
So put that on your calendars, guys. April 9th.
And every year, in theory, a new one will come out. It's a four-book series, and they're always going to be released between Easter and Passover because it's dealing with the beginnings of the Christian church and the Judaic struggle, Hebraic teaching. So it's
I
going to
think
come
that's a
out.
really good timeline too, because it brings back asking the questions, right? We don't ask enough questions sometimes. And I think these books are going to open those doors, and maybe women will understand why we were silenced for a while and why we're all trying to get our voices back now.
Absolutely.
Like, is it
Absolutely.
every 100 years that this happens? Is this every 200 years that, because we get quiet, then we get loud. Then we get quiet, then we get loud.
Well, and we had the suffragettes at the beginning of the 20th century, end of the 19th century. That
Yeah.
would be interesting. Okay, now you're leading me down another path. I'm going to have to do that because I love
Want to
some.
write another book, Miss
I
Liz?
know.
What did you
Well, and interesting, the next woman I want to write about, this is a four book series. The next woman I want to write about was in the mid 12th century to late 12th century, and she ruled on her own in what is now southern France for close to 60 years without being married, without being a husband. And then France decided it was a land grab, and they came down and took over all of the south. They took the Aquitaine, the Languedoc, all of these areas, and she ruled until that time.
Wow.
And women again was like in Judea, that she, they could own property, they could inherit. The best known is Eleanor of Aquitaine, who inherited the Aquitaine and all those lands. And this woman was a contemporary of hers. So maybe it does happen periodically.
Right? We just never know. Maybe there's a new book series coming out. Miss Liz just kind of gave her a little tidbit, like a little tool.
Exactly. Throughout
And I
history.
have done this all year round, guys. I've my guests come on and I'm like, you could slide Miss Liz into your storyline somehow. You know, slide the tea in there somewhere. You know, and tea has been around for centuries. You know, why are we not
Actually, they
swimming in
drink
tea?
tea. They actually drink tea in the Last Magdalen.
See,
They have
so
special
there's
teas.
tea. There's tea related. There's a reason why we're connected, Donna.
There absolutely is. It has to be.
So, Donna, if anybody would like to reach out to you or have you as a guest on their podcast, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah, it's very tough. Donna at donnaconrad.com or just donnaconrad.com. Sign up for my website and you'll receive some of the lost chapters in House of the Moon, and also have notifications in some of my blogs about the Last Magdalen and about life in first century Judea and how women have survived throughout the centuries, even though we've been silenced and we've been maligned and we've been sidestepped. We keep returning. They're vital.
Keep standing, keep rising, right? Taking that chance.
Absolutely.
So, Donna, do you have anything else coming up? Any events or anything that you'd like to share?
Oh, let's see. On my website, you'll be able to see right now we're scheduling out for me teaching at conferences, and then any the book launch will start in April, and I'm sure I'll be doing some speaking, some engagements, and some book signings. So just DonnaConrad.com, and I don't spam anybody. I don't send out a bunch of stuff. I just send out things that are important for you to know.
Just little stories,
Little
storytelling time.
stories, storytelling time. And also, I love to engage with other writers. Please email me. Yeah, to me, we are a village that help each other get along and get through the whole publishing process, or just it, just to find our voice and to be able to write it is so vital today.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap it up, I want to get into this car cruising the back roads in your black on black
Miata.
Miata. I want to talk about this. You know, we want to wrap it up on a good flow out the door. Like we're going for a nice, smooth drive here.
I have to tell you, one of the reasons I'm still with my husband, when the Miatas first came out in the 90s, I said, that is such a cute little car. And he says, one day I'll buy one for you. And I went, oh, yeah. Struggling artist, sure. And sure enough, about 6 years ago, he went out and he found a used black on black. She's beautiful, beautiful, perfect condition. Miata MX-5, convertible, and brought it home to me. And I named her Maya. For Maya Angelou, because Maya Angelou is one of my favorite all-time favorite poets, thinkers, and an incredible soul. And so my fun time, my escape, is to hop in there with the top down, and I live out close to the country, and so I can go and take all the back roads and just be with the wind in my hair and usually 60s rock playing on a really good sound system in the car and just be free. It's my chance of being close to flying, of just gliding along and having not a care.
Oh, I love it. And you know, I like to end it up on a smooth ride out, you know, and we're closing it up and I can't believe that we're at the end of the season. Like I got one of these babies left and all of my tea times are really special to me. So if you'd like to see this tea time or you're watching replay, please push hashtag replay. Let me know where you're tuning in. Donna, thank you so much for joining me on Tea Time. I had a blast. You know, I love when there's a lot of transparency and a lot of real and raw, you know. And I like the little storytelling that you did tonight. I took a lot of notes and I got some good feedback here in that. We do have a couple comments here that I just want to read off that have come into my DM. Wow, thank you. Very transparent. Open and raw. Love it. And buy the ticket, take the ride. Love that
Yeah.
quote. So I'm guessing that that's just a
Hunter
quote from Grandpa
Thompson.
that you used in
Oh, no. Hunter Thompson, who
Hunter
was gonzo
Thompson.
journalism in the 60s. He was kind of my mentor, my what I gauge. I loved his writing, and he was known for gonzo journalism. But yeah, Hunter S. Thompson. I keep saying Hunter Jacob Thompson, but that's a quote out of his book, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Oh, awesome. Well, I
And
want to thank you so much, Donna, because it was a blast. And I will see everybody for the
anytime.
last tea time of 2023, December 18th. And then December 21st, join us all for an incredible reunion tea time. There's a lot of surprises coming. I am super excited to have everyone that is tuning in and joining me that night. Donna, thank you so much. This was a pleasure.
My
Don't leave.
pleasure.
I'm just going to wrap up and we'll
Okay.
talk in
Thank you. It's been
the
wonderful
back.
to speak with you.
And I'll see everybody for the last tea of the year on Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.